This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Local author and historian Rick Britton joins me live in studio. You can check him out online at rickbritton.com. Was it raining when you came in?
It was, and I came down 29. A lot of the intersections were flooded. Now, this was about 10, 15 minutes ago, so people were being really cautious.
Moving slower through the intersections. The lights are working, though?
The lights were working, but there was water in the intersections, a lot of water. Kind of surprising.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We have an unconfirmed report from a regular listener of the program. Ted always joins us every afternoon from Waynesboro, and he said that lightning struck a massive tree in his backyard and took it out. So possibly a microburst in Waynesboro. I'm not quite sure.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know, where's the line between a bad thunderstorm and a microburst?
A microburst, right.
I mean, I'm no meteorologist. I just play one on the radio. So,
right.
You know, I'm not quite sure. An unconfirmed report. So who knows? But yesterday, of course, was very hot, and you were out walking around in the sunshine, weren't you?
I was, with a whole busload of seniors. We had one of our trips in the Civil War lecture and day trip series, and we went down to Richmond, and then in the afternoon, we were on the Malvern Hill battlefield. We just talked about Malvern Hill a few episodes ago.
Yeah, where the Confederates just got slaughtered,
they
right?
They did.
Over 5,000?
Yeah, over 5,000 killed and wounded on that field. And there's a famous account where at the end of the fight at twilight, a Federal soldier looked across the field, and there were so many dead, it looked like the field was crawling. So many dead and wounded that it looked like the field was moving.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah, that's just horrific.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, those people, they'd never seen anything like that.
No,
you know what I mean?
Of course not.
I mean, it's not
there had never been any, in American history, there had never been anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, right. It's not like in our generation, you know, you sort of grow up with whether you know somebody who's been in a war or you've served yourself, or at the very least, you've seen, you know, battlefield images and video, and you're somewhat introduced to war. I mean, these guys, they knew nothing, just stories, right? I mean, they weren't old enough to remember. I mean, maybe
The Mexican War.
I was going to say the Mexican War. Right. Maybe some of them had been down there, but, you know.
Right. Well, the vast majority, though, were volunteers. I mean, you know, the size of the Army at the beginning of the Civil War, the United States Army, was only 16,000. And then when you think that throughout the Civil War, 3 million Americans out of a population of 32 million, 3 million Americans got into the Army, North and South. That's a huge percentage of the population.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of those are volunteers with no exposure to warfare at all.
Yeah, they just didn't know what to expect,
right.
Especially in the first couple of years.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you're down at Malvern Hill. Is that a park now?
Yeah, it's part of the, it's owned by the National Park Service. It's administered by the NPS.
Yeah.
And they've got a lot. They got a lot of acreage down there. Unfortunately, to walk the battlefield, it's one of those battlefields where it's basically a huge open field with no shade. So we were out there 96 degrees.
Yeah.
It was kind of rough.
But it feels like 132.
Right.
Yeah.
It was rough. I made everybody, as they got off the bus, I made everybody take bottled water. We had a big cooler with bottled water, and everybody had to take some with them.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah.
Rick Britton is live in studio, and what we're doing is exploring the top, was 24, but the most significant battles of the U.S. Civil War that were fought here in Virginia.
In Virginia.
And these our previous conversations are available online by podcast at WINA.com, or you can visit the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at cvillepodcast.com.
A great place to go, by the way. There's all kinds of stuff at Cville Podcast.
I mean, if there's
great
been
folks.
Like a public event and radio shows and speaker series, thanks to Sean Tubbs of Charlottesville Tomorrow. He created that website years ago. He was way ahead of the curve on podcasting of anybody in this town, and really led the way. And the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com, that is the place to go. And it is the repository for the complete archive of conversations on this program. I mean, there's
That's
over
right.
a thousand conversations
that's
that I've had
that's amazing,
on
boy.
This program over the last 4 or 5 years that are archived on that website.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And all of our conversations are on there.
Absolutely.
Going back a few years. And
that's
so now you emailed me recently and said, you know what? My list of the 24 is now my list of the 25.
Well, you know what? It's your fault because I came up with 24. Well, we started off with 15. And the past couple of times you said, I'll go ahead and make it 25.
Yeah.
Go ahead and make it 25. So I had that leeway, see? And after talking last week about the Antietam campaign, which is out of our purview because it's in Maryland, I thought of a battle that was fought in Virginia that really ought to be included, and it happens to be number next, the very next one. So we've made it all through 8. So this one I put in at number 9, and now we have 25, you know, a quarter of 100. So I think that's a good number. And it's the Battle of Harper's Ferry. The surrender at Harper's Ferry actually took place on September 15th, 1862. So it's an action that took place during the Maryland campaign, and here's why I consider it to be important. Number one.
And this is the ninth of the 25.
This is number 9 now.
The Battle of Harper's Ferry, September of 1862.
September of 1862. These are the reasons that I think it's very important. It's in Harper's Ferry, Virginia. So just to remind everybody that West Virginia didn't become a state until 1863, the very next year, that's one reason why this is important. It's Harper's Ferry in the state of Virginia, okay?
Because Harper's Ferry today is in West Virginia.
That's right.
Yeah.
But West Virginia didn't become a state until the following year, 1863. And, you know, just to throw this out there, it's one of the arguments that secessionists use, people who are pro-states' rights and pro-secession. If secession was illegal, then why was it legal for the western counties of Virginia to secede from Virginia and become a northern state in the middle of the Civil War? So it's kind of an interesting point of view. It's kind of an interesting argument. It turns things around a little bit.
Yeah.
So Harper's Ferry in the state of Virginia, it's one of the few sieges in Virginia during the Civil War. And looking it up, I discovered it's the largest surrender of United States troops in the Eastern Theater. So for all of those reasons, it's really important. There was a garrison at Harper's Ferry. Harper's Ferry was really important because of the United States Armory and Arsenal. So they're producing
tons of weapons,
small
there.
Arms, yeah. There, and they're housing them for the United States government. Okay, so.
And I remember, just as a sidebar here, we're talking with Rick Britton, and the phone lines are open, 977-1070. I remember when the war first broke out.
That's right.
In 1861, summer of 1861, that UVA students jumped on the trains to go up to Harper's Ferry, right?
That's right. There were two companies of UVA student soldiers, and they became part of a battalion joined with two other local companies, the Albemarle Rifles and the Monticello Guard, and they became the Charlottesville and University Battalion. They got on a train, they went to Harper's Ferry, and they captured Harper's Ferry from the United States.
Just because there are tons of guns there.
Tons of guns.
Got to get their hands on the weapons.
Now, a lot of the stuff had been removed, but they captured a lot of the machinery, and the machinery was brought back to Richmond and put to work making weapons again.
Interesting.
In Richmond, Virginia.
Why was it in Harper's Ferry in the first place? Because it's out in the middle of nowhere, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's a really good question. You've stumped me on that one. I don't know why the U.S. Armory and Arsenal was there. Probably because it's on the Potomac River, and it's at a confluence of two navigable rivers. That's probably the reason. It's at the confluence of the Potomac and the Shenandoah,
which were the highways of the day. So
absolutely.
You want to, if you're making stuff, you want to be near the highway.
That's
just like,
probably the
just
answer.
Just like today.
That's probably the answer right there. And then very soon it had railroad transportation. So it's got all the major venues, how you use transportation. So it's important because it was in Virginia at the time. West Virginia became a state the very next year, 1863. The largest surrender of United States troops. What happened was, Robert E. Lee's army in the Maryland campaign crossed east of the Blue Ridge Mountains and went to Frederick, Maryland. Then he came up with the idea, because there was a garrison at Harper's Ferry, he came up with the idea of trapping that garrison and making them surrender because they had stayed behind. And now they're in his rear. Possibly, they possibly have the opportunity of interrupting his supply lines. So he dispatched Jackson and put Stonewall Jackson in charge of this operation. And Jackson, moving very quickly, was able to approach Harper's Ferry from the Virginia side. He actually went north above it through Maryland, crossed back into Virginia, and approached it on the land side, the Virginia side. Then they were able to get troops on the Loudoun Heights side, which is across the Shenandoah River, onto a virtual mountain. And on the Maryland side, on Maryland Heights, completely surrounding the garrison at Harper's Ferry. And we're talking about, at this point, 13,000 men. When they opened fire...
13,000 men were in Harper's Ferry?
In Harper's Ferry.
Were the federal troops in Harper's Ferry?
Right, in Harper's Ferry, defending Harper's Ferry. That's a huge amount of men. That's a huge number of men, an entire federal division. Now, when they opened fire from those heights with plunging fire, There was really no way for them to defend themselves against that artillery that the Confederates had managed to get up on the heights. So they surrendered. Now, it's kind of interesting.
Jackson was pretty stealth to do that, though. I mean, or did they know they were coming?
They kind of knew they were coming. I don't think they realized how quickly they could completely surround them.
Yeah.
And that was their problem. Now, about 1,000 cavalrymen were able to ride out of the entrapment. So by the time of the surrender, maybe a little bit more than 1,000 cavalrymen rode out and got away and rejoined McClellan's army. So by the time of the surrender, it's about 11,500, 12,000, right around in that surrendered. But that still makes it the largest surrender of United States troops. The other reason that it's really important is they surrendered on September 15th, and then Jackson— Lee sent Jackson an order to rejoin him in Maryland, and he was able to do that, but also a division that he left behind under A.P. Hill to supervise the surrender and the sending of the prisoners down to Richmond.
Is that where they went?
Right. A.P. Hill was able to leave because they surrendered on September 15th. He was able to leave and join the army at the Battle of Sharpsburg at the last possible second and became the hero of the battle 2 days later because he showed up with his division at the last possible second at the exact right place, covering the Confederate right flank.
Wow.
And so all of those things, to me, make this battle very, very important.
We are talking with a local author and historian, Rick Britton, cartographer. RickBritton.com is the website. Now, here's my question for you.
Sure.
They take Harper's Ferry. They get all these prisoners. I want to ask you about the prisoners, too. But it seems like this comes on the heels of Second Manassas. It comes on the heels of the failed invasion of Richmond from the peninsula.
Right.
It's like, there's really good things happening for the Confederacy.
First Manassas was a huge debacle. Yeah. It was a huge rout for the Federals.
Yeah, right. I mean, it sounds like this is, you know, summer and fall of 1862. Granted, they lost a lot of men at Malvern Hill, but it sounds like, you know, a year into the war, great things are happening for the Confederacy.
They're on a roll.
Yeah, exactly.
Great things are happening here in the East. Not so many great things are happening out West.
Yeah.
But Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson are certainly making a name for themselves. And by this time, you know, both of those men were famous around the world. Newspapers were recording their movements and their victories all over the world.
Really?
By this time.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
So the international press is covering the American Civil War.
Absolutely.
It's like front page news in Europe.
The international press shows up anywhere there's the biggest war going on in the world.
Yeah, still do.
Right. And so they show up here, they cover it, and everybody's reading about it all over the
Interesting.
World. Right.
Now, the prisoners that they got in Harper's Ferry, they take them to Richmond.
Right.
Where do they end up? Because, you know, you hear horror stories about prison war camps during the Civil War.
Oh, yeah. And it was pretty bad. There are a lot of places in Richmond, Castle Thunder, Libby Prison, Belle Isle. They would handle as many as they could, and then they were sent, the excess, the ones that they couldn't handle, were sent further into the Deep South. But there's been a recent study came out, about 10 years ago. That's still recent to me.
Yeah.
Studying the casualty rates, the death rates at the prisoner of war camps north and south, and they weren't all that different.
Yeah, because you hear that the southern camps were really, really bad, and they were starving them.
The southern camps were really bad, but here's the fact is. The fact is that they weren't feeding the men in the ranks very well either. So the men in the prisoner of war camps were basically getting the same fare, maybe a little bit less, than the men in the ranks. But there were plenty of horrible places, horrible prison camps in the north as well, where the death rate was close to what the death rate was in the south. Just a terrible story.
We're talking with Rick Britton. We are exploring the most significant battles of the U.S. Civil War that were fought here in Virginia. We're talking with local author Rick Britton, exploring the most significant battles that took place here in Virginia during the Civil War. So Harper's Ferry is September of 1862. Major win for the Confederacy. Yet another example of the team of Lee and Jackson. It's just like they just know what they're doing, you know?
Right.
Well, I mean, do you see that kind of smarts on the Union side?
Later on, we're going to see that kind of smarts.
Because you certainly don't see it from McClellan.
Later on, we're going to see that kind of smarts. I think a simple way to explain it is early on, the Confederacy had the best leaders here in the Eastern Theater. And like, for example, after the 7 days, a lot of the guys who hadn't performed up to Robert E. Lee's standard, they got shipped out west. early on in the war, from the federal point of view, they got some good guys out west, and they brought them east to face Robert E. Lee.
Interesting.
So it's a kind
Is
that of
when
a simple,
you see Grant
kind
coming
of a,
in?
Exactly. Grant. And Grant brings Sheridan with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, one
now,
of his top commanders.
Now, according to our list, we got 25 significant battles in the U.S. Civil War fought in Virginia.
Right.
We just looked at number 9, which is Harper's Ferry. The next one, number 10, which took place just a few months later, in December of 1862, is Fredericksburg. That's
right.
A huge battle.
That's a huge one with a lot
huge
of stories, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so what we're going to do is we're going to talk about that next week. But preview it for us. But before you do, right after Harper's Ferry, as you just said, was Sharpsburg, as the South calls it, or Antietam.
Antietam.
As the North calls it,
right.
Which was the bloodiest battle of the Civil War, right?
The bloodiest single day of the Civil War. So Sharpsburg, here in the South we call it Sharpsburg, in the North you call it Antietam.
It didn't take place in Virginia, but tell us what happened since it happened right after Harper's Ferry.
Right. Well, McClellan was able to intercept, he had this amazing fortuitous thing happen, and they were able to capture, they found in a field, one of Robert E. Lee's general orders that outlined where the different pieces of his army were. So with this in his hand, McClellan was able to see that Robert E. Lee's men were separated, and that if he moved quickly enough, he might be able to isolate and destroy Robert E. Lee's Army of Northern Virginia in detail. And that's what you want to do. You want to focus a large number of your men against a small number of the enemy's force and gobble them up in detail. Piece by piece. So he moved uncharacteristically quickly. And they fought some battles in the extension of the Blue Ridge Mountains in Maryland. They fought the battles of Turner's Gap, Crampton Gap. He was trying to force through the gaps to get over into the next valley where most of Robert E. Lee's men were. Lee, discovering this, was forced to concentrate, and he decided he was going to concentrate just east of the town of Sharpsburg and just behind Antietam Creek. And so McClellan shows up, and on September 17th, they fight the bloodiest single day in the American Civil War. In that one day, close to 25,000 killed and wounded on both sides.
Why was it so
horrific day?
I mean, they had plenty of battles before this and after. What was it about this particular engagement?
One of the reasons is Robert E. Lee had no place to go. Sharpsburg is just off the Potomac, and behind him, there was really only one ford. So he was in a position where he had
one place to cross the river.
Yeah. One place to get away. So he was in a position where he had to stand and fight. They could not retreat. And if you have to stand and fight and you can't give ground, you're going to take a lot more casualties. And McClellan outnumbered him. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, A.P. Hill shows up at just the right moment on the Confederate right flank and saves the day. McClellan didn't destroy Robert E. Lee, mainly because he attacked him piecemeal. First, he attacked on the Federal right, and Lee was able to shift reinforcements to fend off that attack and throw it back. Then he attacked in the Confederate center, the Federal center. Robert E. Lee was able to shift forces to fend that off. Then he attacked the Confederate left, the Confederate right, the Federal left, and he was able to throw them back. And then A.P. Hill shows up exactly at the right moment and is able to fend off that attack.
Again, more evidence that McClellan wasn't really up to the job.
Wasn't the guy.
Yeah.
Grant would have sent everybody forward at once. If he had made two of those attacks at once, it would have been too much.
And he would have destroyed the Battle of Northern, the Army of Northern Virginia.
Very possibly. Or yeah. Trapped it up against the Potomac and captured it en masse.
Rick Britton, he's online at rickbritton.com. We are exploring the 25 most significant battles of the American Civil War that were fought here in Virginia. And Rick, we'll look forward to talking to you again next week.
Me too. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.